Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. All right, this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 150. This is Ashland Dave, and I'm coming at you from Ashland, Virginia, the center of the universe. And it is race week, week of March 10th, 2012. It's a big week for me as I prepare for the Graveyard 100, 100K is what I'm going to be doing down there. And I've got a very special edition this week because I've got Chris from Pine Mountain, Georgia, via Skype, and we are going to talk about his 100K effort, which was on February 18th, down in at the Iron Horse 100K in just outside Jacksonville, Florida. And he was very successful in that, and it was kind of a redemption race of sorts for him after a previous effort in October at the North Face Endurance Challenge at Pine Mountain, Georgia, which was a 50-miler that I guess was a DNF, and I guess we can talk about a little bit about that. So, Chris, thanks for coming along this evening. I really appreciate your time.
Listen, I'm really glad to be here, Dave. This is a big honor for me, so glad to be on the show.
I'm glad to have you. You'll know that you're in very elite company because I've only done, I think, two previous interviews in the past couple of years since I've had the podcast. One was one of my good friends, Tom, that you probably heard about on the podcast. He qualified, he's a Boston qualifier. And then Mandy from Ultras for Mortals blogs, which is a blog, and she was very instrumental in helping me with tips and stuff through running through the Florida Keys. So just so that some of the listeners will kind of know a little bit about you, I know you have a blog that's called Running After Daylight. I'll make sure I get the right one down there. I think it's called runningafterdaylight.blogspot.com. And why don't you talk a little bit about that before we get into some of your marathon history?
Sure. So I started the blog a few years ago, just really as a means of keeping me accountable just through training. I'm definitely one of those kind of people that if I don't have a race on the calendar, if I don't have an event that I'm training for, I'm just not going to be as religious about getting out there and putting the miles in. So I started the blog to really try to connect with other runners and just get held accountable. I knew if I put a training schedule out there and if I regularly would post to it and give updates on how I was progressing, that it would keep me honest. So that's really how that's flowed, and it's been really, really pretty neat to connect with a lot of other runners out there.
What is the title of the blog, which is kind of your theme? And I read your race report at the runningafterdaylight.blogspot.com, where you stated again that you do a lot of your running around the midnight hours. What is that all about?
You know, so here it is. Like a lot of us, you know, I have that same struggle with balancing running and training and all the things that come with being, you know, a dad, a husband, you know, I've got a job, all those things. You know, when I started running about 7 years ago, I quickly came to see that the best time I have for getting out there and getting the miles in is after everyone else is asleep. So to this day, I've logged, I guess, right at 9,400 miles in the last 7 years, and I would say probably 8,500 of them are between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m.
Wow, that's remarkable.
My wife has long since decided that I'm out of my mind, but it's definitely something that speaks to me now because I take a lot of it's very, you know, it's just completely calm and quiet when it's the middle of the night and everyone else is asleep. So you really get time to kind of just think through things in your own head. So
do you sleep during the day?
No, I'm one of the people who I get by on about 4 hours of sleep a day, and that's all I really ever need. If I sleep more than that, I just feel horrible. I'll have a headache, I'll be sore, stiff. So I get on average between about 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night, and that works pretty well for me.
Wow, you're like a almost like a super ultra runner.
No, not really at all.
All right, well, make sure all you listeners out there, make sure you check out that blog, and I'll hit that again at the end of the show. I do have some questions I want to ask you, Chris. How did you get into – you said you've been running for the last, I think you said 7 years. Sounds like you've logged a lot of miles. How did, at what point in time did you get into marathoning, and then how did that then turn into ultras? When did you run your first marathon, and when did you run your first ultra?
I started running my first goal race from not being able to run, you know, more than a block or two. I trained for, I think my first race was a 10K. I ran that, and probably just steady running for the next 7 or 8 months, just, you know, 15, 20 miles a week every other day. And as I mentioned earlier, I just realized that if I didn't have something, if I didn't have a goal on the calendar, I just wasn't very disciplined, I guess. And that's probably not a good thing, but I did realize that early on. But I was listening to some other podcasts, actually, and one of the podcasts I listened to was talking about marathon training, and really went into explaining that, you know, the average person, if they put in the time, put in the effort, can complete a marathon. So about a year after I started running, I ran my first marathon. And after that, I just really, you know, felt the hook, felt the bug, and ran probably, I ran about 3 to 4 marathons a year for about 5 years. So I've done right at 15, 16 marathons, fair number of halves, plenty of 5Ks. I got into the ultra running with the first year of the North Face Endurance Series when it began 2 years ago in 2010.
Okay, I think that's the one that I was down there helping Rodney, where we probably crossed paths but just didn't meet up.
Right, that, yeah. with Pine Mountain being in my backyard about 15
that's
minutes
right.
away when the North Face brought their Endurance Series there, I entered for the 50K, trained pretty hard for that, had a really good race. Got injured during the race, but finished it. And from that point on, a marathon just really, I lost the desire to go out and train for 4 months to try to shave 2 minutes off of a marathon PR. And ultras just really speak to me now.
So how did you pick the one in Florida? I know that the Pine Mountain, which they were calling the Atlanta one, but you cleared that up about a year ago for me, and I'd never really called it North Face Atlanta ever since. why did you choose the one in Florida? Was that just because this was the time, and why did you decide to go up to the 100K distance, which I presume you hadn't done before, in lieu of doing another 50-miler?
Well, you know, so as you mentioned earlier, I had registered to run the North Face 50-miler last October in Pine Mountain. Trained, you know, really, really hard for that for the better part of 6 months. Put in a, you know, a lot of miles, a lot of hard, hard training. Felt absolutely prepared for that. Race day, I, you know, we talk a lot about the importance of not doing anything different on race day than you did in training and how important that is. And on race day, I just made several key mistakes that ultimately led to me DNFing at about mile 28, 29, I believe. That was tremendously difficult for me. I'd never DNF'd a race before, and I wrestled with that for weeks. I began looking for another race, another ultra, and after October, there just weren't really any nearby. And as I saw this race, the Iron Horse Endurance 100 in Florida, I realized that, you know, looked like a good race in which I could try to rebuild some confidence, because I lost a lot of confidence in that North Face race with that DNF. They had a 50-miler at the Iron Horse Series,
okay.
And that's what I'd originally registered for. A couple of weeks after that, I just began thinking, you know, if I'm going to try to redeem that failure, that DNF, I need to try to take it a little bit farther. So I actually reached out to the race director and asked if I could switch my registration to the 100K. And he graciously allowed me to do that, and that just gave me a little more incentive to train that much harder. But as I think you had mentioned before in some of our conversations, 100K is a daunting distance. It really is. So that led me to train a little bit harder.
Now, you had an incredible finishing time, 15:28 and some change. I think that's what the website just had it as 15:28. I think your watch must have had 15:29. What was your – I guess you were pretty pleased with that, needless to say.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased with it. I had I actually met up with a buddy down there that I had met online through a Facebook group for the race, and he was running his first 50-miler. I ran with him for the first 50 miles. both to kind of help him along. He was, you know, definitely a newbie and, you know, had a lot of things he had not planned on, you know, salt, nutrition, hydration. So I was able to help him a lot. And conversely, he helped me just with having some company on the trail. 50 miles is a long, long way to go without without knowing anyone or having that conversation. So he definitely helped me a lot. But all in all, if it had been 15 or if it had been 25, I would have been pleased just with the fact that I, you know, was able to reach a new milestone in terms of distance.
Well, no doubt. Was there a time cutoff for that distance and for that event?
There was a single time cutoff for the 100-miler and the 100K, which was basically 26 hours. So you literally could have almost crawled it on your hands and knees and still made the cutoff.
Now, do you have any issues with we'll get into the fueling part because that's what I'm most interested in. But do you have any blistering problems or cramping problems? Do you any single weakness that you know that you other than or mental, you know, mental situations that you get into? What is the thing that you mainly worry about?
The biggest thing that I was worried about going into this race was definitely the blistering. I haven't had a tremendous amount of problem with blisters, but because of the trail and just being on your feet that long, you're obviously going to have, you know, the three things for blistering: moisture, friction, and heat.
That's right.
You're going to have all three of those. So I tried to make as much allowance as I could with packing in my drop bags, you know, a little blister kit. You know, I had the tape, I had, you know, the little lances, all the things that I knew that I could need, you know, possibly down the trail. But I just decided early on that before the race began that when I identified that there was a problem along the way, I was going to stop and deal with the problem immediately, not try to put it off, not try to, you know, think it's going to get better, because it never does get better. It's just going to get worse. So that's the one thing I really stuck to going through the race, and that definitely helped.
Did you do shoe and sock changes, or do you not need to do that?
I had planned on switching shoes, on doing a shoe change at about mile 50. I actually did change shoes. I left the socks on, but I did change the shoes literally within probably 10 seconds of getting up wearing the new shoes. I realized that the problem with changing shoes in that kind of a distance at 50 miles, for me at least, was that I'd already developed a couple of, not what I'd really call a hot spot, but my foot had gotten so accustomed to the shoe I was wearing that the shoes I switched into, they put pressure on weak points on the bottom of my feet, and it made it uncomfortable. So as soon as I put the other shoes on, took three or four steps, I turned around, sat back down, and put the original pair back on. So going forward, I probably won't change shoes
again. I didn't see that in your race report, or maybe I missed it.
I think I probably completely forgot about it now that you mentioned it. I'll have to go back and do an edit.
Okay, how about the fueling? Now, in your race report, which all you listeners out there that listen to the show, this is a huge, it's a great opportunity to learn from someone who just basically just tore up this course and, you know, just really went into it mentally strong, and the fueling started right from the very beginning. And you said you were really following the race plan for your aid stations. What was your race plan for fueling? And you said you ate at every aid station beginning at the first one, and maybe actually were eating too much. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So going into it, the thing that I really, as I look back at that North Face race and what ultimately led to the DNF, was just a complete failure on the nutrition front in terms of I wasn't drinking consistently in those early miles. I passed the first two aid stations without even stopping, just trying to put some time in the bank, which I realize now was just such a foolish, you know, way to go. So going into the 100, what I had decided was at each aid station, I'm going to stop. I'm going to invest some time in that aid station, and I'm going to get my 250 to 320 calories that I need each hour. I carry gels. I'm not a big gel person. You know, I can do them in a marathon. I can do them in a 50K. But knowing that I was going to be on the course for 12 to 16 hours, you know, I can't eat 40 gels. My stomach won't take that. So the biggest thing, and this is my biggest piece of advice for anyone doing this kind of distance, is number one, hydration. Whether you're carrying water, electrolytes, or whatever, carry something. and be sure that you're getting, depending on, you know, humidity and temperature, if it's hotter, obviously you need even more, but be sure you're getting adequate hydration between aid stations. When you get to the aid station, be sure you're absolutely taking in calories. If you can't eat on the fly, if you're, you know, carrying gels or Stinger waffles, whatever, you know, you've done training, make use of that aid station, whether it's, you know, a couple of halves of peanut butter sandwich or, you know, chips, M&M, whatever it is, make use and get those calories early on. Don't wait until mile 20 to start thinking about nutrition and hydration, because I can absolutely tell you that's what led to me DNFing that race in October. And probably once or twice during the 100, I could tell that my energy was, you know, was really hitting kind of a low point. So when I got to that next aid station, you know, I really bordered on probably eating too much. But I can tell you that as the day went on and as the miles, you know, kept, you know, accumulating, I literally found that after those first 5-6 hours of aid stations and, you know, eating on the run, I felt better energy wise at mile 40 than I felt at mile 10.
Wow.
And that's never happened for me before. I've never been this disciplined about eating and drinking, and it absolutely made all the difference. And that's my number one piece of advice to anyone running an ultra: is eat early, drink often, and keep that calorie count coming in from the earliest part of the race, and it will absolutely pay dividends for you.
Yeah, and you hear that all the time from you know, these websites that have lots of advice for people that run ultras, is, you know, or walk early, walk often, drink early, drink often. But I'm the same as you. You sometimes you want to try to bank some time, thinking, well, I can, you know, when I really need it, I'll sit down and drink for a while. But you never really get to that point because you're always on always trying to bank time. So your advice is just to start it from the very beginning, even if the aid station's just a few miles down the road, right?
Absolutely. There is no single nugget of wisdom that I've learned any time in running that's more key and that has paid more dividends than that. Eat early, eat often, keep that calorie count coming constant and steady, try to just not put as much emphasis on the time, especially with this kind of distance, because you know, if you bank 20-30 minutes that first 10-15 miles, it could cost you mighty heavily in the latter part of the race.
And in really a 15-hour, 16-hour race, 20-30 minutes is really pretty insignificant, isn't it?
It really is. You know, as I look back at that race, when I finished it, you know, I had a couple – my feet were sore. I definitely was tired, but I have no doubt I could have run the race at least an hour faster.
Hopefully your house isn't burning down.
Sorry about that. Someone must have come in the back door.
I want
the time is definitely, try to let that go as much as you can until the latter part of the race.
Now, I know that you didn't train with the drink that was there on race day, so you stuck to water and S-caps. What was your intake of the S-caps? I can't remember what you said the temperatures were. Were they in the 40s or 50s or 60 degrees, it looked like?
Yeah, the S-caps, I had been training with those, you know, so I'm, you know, pretty confident with, you know, what I need from a sodium perspective. But, yeah, the temperatures were in the 60s, and at the peak of the day, it were around 72 degrees. So it was relatively warm for this time of year. I was at the peak of the day, I was going through about 4 S-caps an hour.
Okay.
Because I wasn't getting electrolytes in terms of fluid, just carrying, you know, I had 2 20-ounce bottles on my waist that I was drinking water from. So I went through a lot of water, about 360 ounces actually over the course of the first half. So I went through a lot of water, and I had to supplement with the S-caps pretty consistently. I did no less than 2 S-caps an hour, and probably no more than 4 an hour.
Did you have any stomach issues at all from not taking in your calories as much? Well, it looks like if you're just drinking water, you weren't taking any calories through liquid. I know that stomach has to, it's harder for the stomach to absorb calories through food. I guess if you're taking in plenty of water, you probably didn't have too much trouble. But did you ever have any stomach issues at all? That's, you know, that's a long time to be out there without any GI situations.
Yeah, I've been very, very fortunate since I've been running. I've never, knock on wood, had any stomach issues. But I'll say this too, with the people that I ran with and, you know, saw, you know, many, many times throughout the course of the race, that was the one thing that I didn't come across many people that were having issues, having GI type issues on the course. A lot of that can, I think, be attributed to the fact that, you know, when you're talking a 100K distance, your pace is obviously going to be considerably less than even a 50K or 50 mile, or it should be. Mine is, let me say it that way. So I think that probably has something to do with it as well. I was doing basically a run 5, walk 1 minute interval type pace. So that probably contributed to it as well. But no, I did not have any stomach issues. I've been pretty lucky on that front.
Now, I know that you ran with Tim through the 50-mile mark, saw him cross the finish line. Then, of course, you had another – what was the actual distance? Was it – how much over 62 was it? Oh, shit, we lost the connection. Okay, I know you said Tim – you ran with Tim through the first 50 miles. What did you do after he crossed the finish line and you had to keep going? How did that work out? Were you by yourself?
I was by myself. We crossed the 50-mile mark at probably about it was about an hour after dark. So I was headed out for about a 5-mile loop, and then I had to come back for the remaining 7-mile out and back total. It was definitely a different type of experience once you're running in the dark and you're pretty much alone. But that's really one of the things where, because I run most of my training at night alone, I was really looking forward to that. I had been, you know, enjoying the company and, you know, the camaraderie of having, you know, a trail buddy there to talk with, but I was really looking forward to that. And, it proved to be not that difficult for me. And I attribute a lot of that to the fact that I log, you know, those miles at night alone by myself already. So, pretty interested to see how your race, how you like it, the running at night. That sounds pretty intriguing to me. I think I would like that. I'm curious to see how much you know how you like that after the race.
Well, I'm definitely interested in that part of the challenge. I know it's going to be running through a sunset and then hopefully making it to a sunrise and hopefully finishing not too long after that. I'm not putting any time estimate. My wife had a friend came over earlier today and they were going out running and she was asking me what I thought my finishing time would be. And I, you know, of course you have one in your brain that you take to the race that you just feel like that's something that you might be able to do. But I'm just going to kind of keep that close to the vest, I guess, because you just don't ever know what problems you run into. You know, you try to plan for foot problems or stomach problems, but I guess, the variable is going to pop up that I'll end up having to deal with. Did you have any issues or any mental situations where you fall down into to an abyss and have to climb your way out, or did you pretty much stay mentally high all day?
You know, the thing that I found is it really gets back to that nutrition part of it. I realized that, you know, as I look back, I realized that a lot of the reason that I didn't ever really hit that dark place, that dark spot, is because I was able to keep my energy, you know, that blood sugar, pretty consistent throughout the day. For me, at least, the times when, you know, I've had the low spot during a race, it's pretty much followed in line with the points where, you know, I was suffering physically from not getting enough calories, or, you know, maybe being a bit dehydrated, or both. I think the nutrition is just so key. You know, I definitely had a couple of points in the race. I mentioned in the race report, I think, that it was a huge hurdle to me getting from the marathon distance to the 50K on race day. It seemed as though that 50K mark was never going to get there. I knew once I cleared that 31-mile mark, it would really seem a lot more real working the 100K, because I know mentally I'm on the backside of you know, finishing the race once I crossed that halfway mark. So getting to that 50K mark was a pretty big hurdle. Once I got to that, you know, I really began to feel, you know, a lot more confident. And just looking at it, confidence for a distance especially, you know, you're talking 100K, you know, 60 plus miles. Confidence before the race, during the race is just so important. I told a buddy on the course something that I had heard months ago about ultras, and a lot of people I think have heard this as well, but he was really struggling at this one point just mentally, and I told him, I said, listen, remember, an ultra is about 95% mental and the other 70% is physical. And that's really about it.
Yeah, that math doesn't work.
It does about mile 40. No math works.
I like that a lot. I'm going to have to copy that. I'll give you due credit, of course.
There's no charge for that.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you started off with maintained the run 5, walk 1. What did you do in your training, and what did you plan to do on race day? And did you have to modify that due to aid stations or whatnot? And did you do it all with your Garmin? Did you have any other kind of timer, or did you just look at your watch? What helped you kind of maintain that pattern? Okay. We were talking before the technical breakdown. Let's just talk a few more minutes. We're talking about the run walk pattern, and you were start with a 5 and 1. Did you do any other anything else, or did you pretty much stick to that? And is that what you've been doing in your training?
Yeah, that's what I've been. I've been working with a 5 and 1, between a 5 and 1 and a 10 and 1 throughout training. I probably would have gone with the run 10, walk 1 for race day, but again, I was going with a buddy, and he had been, you know, conservatively, you know, trying 5-1, and that seemed to work pretty well. I just basically used the Garmin, set, you know, timer interval, and that, you know, kept everything on track. The one thing that, you know, if it got thrown off throughout the course, it was during those aid stations, because I really made it a point not to run out of the aid stations quickly. I really wanted to focus on using the aid station, getting the nutrition, taking my time, you know, refilling the bottles, all the things that I knew ultimately were going to, you know, make a difference in the race. You know, the rabbits and the leaders, you know, those guys who are out there tearing up the course a lot faster than I was, they may spend 15 seconds at an aid station, but I didn't hesitate to spend, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes at an aid station. That just really yielded benefits later in the race. So,
what was the food that you seemed to gravitate towards? That you stick with one thing after you got tired of the PB&J, Pringles, and other stuff? Did you gravitate? You know, did you see something that you were hoping it was at the next aid station, and you just hit that?
Yeah, I was the standard ultra fare, the peanut butter sandwiches, the cookies, the, you know, all the junk food, really, because it's not so much that it's overly nutritious by any means, but, you know, you can get a good, you know, 120, 130 calories just in a quarter peanut butter jelly sandwich, or, you know, a couple of Chips Ahoy's, or a, you know, handful of M&M's. I mean, it really is junk food, there's no doubt, but it gives you what you really need, and that's the quick calories without having to put, you know, a lot of heavy stuff in your stomach. They had the salted potatoes, the you know, as you said, the Pringles, the things like that. I tried to mix it up from aid station to aid station a little bit, just so I didn't get burned out on any one thing. The nice thing was, you know, as you got later in the race, some of the aid stations had chicken noodle soup. I pulled into an aid station at about mile 57, I believe it was, and they were making crawfish gumbo and bratwurst. And believe it or not, I sat down and had a couple of bowls of crawfish gumbo and had a bratwurst, and that was probably not the smartest fueling strategy, but with 5-6 miles left, I thought it was okay, so that worked out all right. That was a nice change, because you get tired of peanut butter sandwiches after, well, 13, 14, 15 hours.
So any funny tales from the trail that didn't make it to the race report, or was it any anybody take any good spills, or did you fall down yourself? Any injuries?
You know, the thing that was probably the funniest about this race is it runs on an old rails to trail. Okay. It crosses three bridge trellises, three railroad trestles, that go across some swampland. They're probably about 100 to 150 feet long. This rail has been retired and decommissioned 10 years ago. So these trestles are in pretty bad order. They're in pretty bad shape, to the point where the race director actually and the race committee goes out and nails 2x6 boards onto each side of the trestle. You have to walk across the trestle on these boards. You can't run because they'll actually disqualify you if an aid station captain sees you trying to run it. But you're going over these creeks and swamplands 20, 25 feet below the trestle. If you take a dive off there, there's alligators in there, which is pretty funny. You know, I'm not a very coordinated guy by any means. So to be honest, that's the thing that I really thought about most for this race was, you know, forget, can I cross this bridge without, you know, these three trestles without falling in at mile 60? Can I do it at mile 4? That was the thing that probably going in I was most concerned with, because I don't have tremendous coordination by any means. So, but I didn't see anyone go in. I didn't see anyone take a dive. It was pretty comical to see to some of the people late at night, especially. They were moving at a snail's pace across those trestles. But caution was definitely the order of the day.
Did you put one of those pictures of those boards on your website? I did. I was wondering what that was. Okay.
Yep, that's exactly what it was. So again, it was a pretty it was a good encouragement not to fall.
Well, I've got just two more questions, I guess, and we can talk some more offline as long as the connection stays. The biggest question I have before we end is, did the Garmin last for 15 plus hours?
The Garmin did not. I run with a Garmin 305. I don't have one of the newer ones. The newer model.
That's what I've got. Yeah, I've got a 305 too.
Yeah, the 305 is actually rated for 12 hours. I ended up getting about 13 and a half hours out of it. So I've got my mile splits up to mile 55, I believe it is. 52, I'm sorry. The new Garmins will get, I think, up to 18 hours. But I lost my Garmin before the race completed, which I was kind of disappointed in, but what can you do? I'm too cheap. I won't spend the kind of money it takes for one of the nicer ones.
Oh, I'm glad that I asked that, because I've got actually two Garmins, one that I kind of inherited from my dad, so maybe I'll come up with a strategy on that. And I guess the last thing I wanted to ask is, what was what did you go for right after the race was over for your immediate recovery? Was it an adult beverage, or did you go for whatever they had at the finish there?
It was another bratwurst, another beverage, and some chicken soup, and just the first folding chair I could find. I ended up with probably I had a blister on the ball of my right foot, maybe about the size of a quarter. It wasn't tremendously bad, but I had to deal with that. But other than that, you know, it was the training. I feel good about the training that I put into the race, because I was running. Within four days, I felt fine. I had no lingering issue whatsoever. So the training is key. I know you've put a lot of effort into training for the graveyard coming up. So I think you're gonna be surprised what you'll be able to do and how strong you'll feel in the process.
Well, that's just a few days away. So what do you have on – what's your next goal? Have you still reflected on your past recent ultra, or you got anything planned for this spring?
I'm looking at a couple of 50Ks. One is next month. It's a pretty aggressive 50K, a lot of good climbs. Looking at that as well as a couple – there's probably three 50Ks here within the southeast – between now and midsummer that I'm looking at, that I'm planning on doing. I don't know if you knew, the North Face just opened enrollment a couple of weeks ago for the endurance series. I'm trying to get a decision made on, on the 50 miler or the 50K. I'm probably going to do 50 miler again. I spent some time out on Pine Mountain Trail last weekend, and that kind of rekindled my desire to go try to bring that race to a closure. So looking for that, but other than that, I don't have anything really planned beyond the summer yet.
Well, I certainly wish you the best in that, and I'm sure that we'll probably talk again, and someday hopefully we'll cross paths at some point. Now, have you done, did you actually do a 50-miler, or did you go right from the 50K to the 100K?
I went from the 50K to the 100K. There, aside from the North Face race, there really aren't any 50-milers near where I live. I don't do too many jump on a plane and you know, fly to a race. I just don't. Again, I'm pretty much a tightwad, so I'm pretty reluctant to do that. But yeah, I went from the 50K to the 100K. Having done the 100K though, the 50 mile seems a lot more manageable now than it did. But you know, as we both know and have learned, you know, the terrain and the course makes all the difference. Because you know, all 50 milers or all 50Ks, for that matter, they're not equal.
Okay. Well, I'd like to, if you just hold on a second after I finish, we'll talk a little bit more while I close out the show. But I wanted to thank you for your time, and we got through the technical difficulties here. I was, for all the listeners out there, Chris and I had to chat back and forth before we could get this connection reestablished, and I was joking. I don't know if you saw what I typed, Chris, that I got a better connection when we call Italy for some relatives I have over there. So anyway, I thanks for listening to the podcast, and thanks for agreeing to be interviewed. I'd like to do more of these in the future, and certainly we're a good subject matter, and I'd like to pick your brain a little bit more here. But for right now, this is Ashland Dave with Chris, and that's it for the interview. Thanks a lot, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
And that was Chris from Pine Mountain, Georgia. Really appreciate that, Chris. Appreciate taking the time to talk to me about your 100K effort down there back in late February, and I picked up on a few things, one being the fueling strategy. Definitely eat early and eat often, and I'm glad I asked about the Garmin, because I've got mixed experience with the Garmin and Ultras. When I did my first 50 miler, which was June of 2010, I forgot to charge it, so I ran that whole 50 miles with just a digital wristwatch, you know, with a stopwatch. And then when I did my second 50 miler last year, June of 2011, the Garmin lasted for the whole time, which was 11 hours and 52 minutes. So I was good to go with that. And I guess, you know, the 20 minutes or so before the race started. So I think mine will probably exceed, will be right at 12 hours. So what I did is I went and got my backup Garmin, which I kind of inherited, which I mentioned earlier, I got from my dad. That the reason he gave it to me is because he had upgraded. And so I took it, but it doesn't keep a real good connection on the charger, so I gotta put lots of rubber bands around it to hold it in the charger so it'll charge. So what I'm gonna do is just charge up both Garmins and, you know, run with one, and I guess maybe at the 50K mark switch them out if I can remember, or whatever aid station or crew stop is close to that, and switch them out, and then hit the rest of the race. And then I guess for the whole thing I will have a stopwatch going just so I don't miss anything. I think the new Garmin is rated for a little bit longer. But anyway, thanks again, Chris. Really appreciate it. Hopefully we'll get to talk again. Now, I have to mention that I am putting my list together right now for the 100K, and I got a real good email from Sandy, who, by the way, has helped sponsor this race for me. She was very kind in sponsoring me for this race. And so, Sandy, I have to you know, definitely take my hat off to you. I really do appreciate that very much. But she sent me her list that she puts together before she goes on ultras. So I was able to use that and make up my own list, which is now about a page full of stuff. But now that the weather looks a little bit better for my race, I don't think I'm going to have to stuff as much long pants in there, because it looks like it's going to be maybe mid-40s overnight. Of course, that can change, but you know, I've been watching the forecast almost every day. So I did get a couple good email shout-outs, which I want to include, and then I've got some other emails that I will save for the next show that are just topic emails. I did want to do a shout-out to Jamie, who I hadn't heard from in a while. She hit the put a comment on the website at ashlanddave.podbean.com. She commented on the last episode, which was called Arlington Field of Honor. She's got a good friend buried there, and she's doing the Marine Corps Marathon again this year, which she raises money for Team for Hope, which benefits the Wounded Warriors. And she noted in her posting that the last mile of the Marine Corps Marathon has Arlington National Cemetery standing proudly at the top of the hill. And that's pretty cool, Jamie. I appreciate you passing that on. I haven't run that marathon before, so I don't know what that is like, although I've been to Arlington a couple times now. So, you know, one of these days I think I'm going to have to try to get into that race. I appreciate that post on the website. But anyway, I got some shout-outs. I heard from Neil from the UK, who is going to be over here in the States here soon. He's going to be sweeping the course at the Oak Mountain 50K on March 31st, which is in the area of Birmingham, Alabama. And Neil sent me a very nice email talking about how he was inspired by the podcast. And, you know, that's really what makes it all worth it for me, is sharing my love of this sport for people who are at all levels of it. And he was inspired to sign up for that race, found out it was full, but then was offered to sweep the course. So he will be out on his feet for 8 to 9 hours, if not more, at Oak Mountain State Park on March 31st. So thanks very much, Neil, for the email, and I hope to stay in touch with you. I also heard from Tim, also known as Buelo Runs. He recently did the Goofy Challenge, and he is hosting the upcoming Choo Choo Loco, which is a fat-ass 50K. It is on April 28th in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you're interested in that, go to his website, which you can search for Abuelo Runs. That's A-B-U-E-L-O-R-U-N-S. So, Tim, good to hear from you, and appreciate the shout-out for the 100K this coming weekend. Of course, I heard from Dirt Dog, and he actually sent me a shirt from View Sport, which was a manufacturer of athletic shirts that's kind of interesting. You have to go listen to his podcast if you want to know more about that. It just search Dirt Dog Podcast. It's dog as in D-A-W-G. And he's been giving me lots of advice for the upcoming 100K also. So definitely appreciate that a whole lot. Great podcast that he's got. I listen to every episode. I really like it. Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate that. I also heard from Dr. Smitty. He is... let's see. He had shout out. He actually has a. He talked a little bit about the suffering. What I think I'm gonna do is I want to save his for actually another show, because he talked a little bit about how he commented on the suffering that I talked about in the last episode. So we're gonna save that, I think, for the next show. And then also I heard from Richard of the Woodlands, Texas. He did a shout out for the 100K. Appreciate that. Rich, he recently ran the Woodlands Marathon on March 3rd, which is in his hometown. So, well done, Richard. Always good to hear from you. And once again, Richard, I will try to get the Hawaii 5-0 theme. Well, I tell you what, let's do a little Hawaii 5-0 music right now. This is Richard's favorite show. All right, that's about all I can get in there. Yeah, that's it for the emails this week. I'm going to save... Dr. Smitty's for the next one, because he talked a little bit about the suffering, and I don't want to cut that one short, so we'll save that for the next episode, which will be 151, which will be the race report from the Graveyard 100K down in the Outer Banks, which I'll be doing this weekend. So I am getting ready for that, and that's the show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks again to Chris for the interview, and also thanks to everybody that wrote in and to voice their support for my effort. I really do appreciate that, and thanks especially to Sandy for the sponsorship, and to my crew, Ashlyn Bob, Rodney, and Ashlyn Tom. We'll all be down there together. I've got 3 people on my crew. It's an all-nighter, so I basically need a driver and some handlers that can trade off, because it's a overnight race. And I guess I'm pretty much ready. I've done the mileage. Now I just got to get, everything mentally ready. Physically, I'm ready. You know, obviously I have all kinds of anxiety this week, but I guess I'll get there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but I've set up a Twitter account, a reactivated one that I started back in 2009 that I kind of abandoned because I just couldn't keep up with it, meaning I just wasn't doing anything on it. But I have had some requests for updates, so what I will do is get my friend Tom, or whoever's got internet access on their handheld device, to do updates on Twitter. So you can just search Ashlyn Dave on Twitter and start following me, and you'll get the updates, hopefully. Of course, it's an overnight race, but some people have asked to kind of get them into the evening and into the morning. So do that, and if you want to email me at ashlyndave@gmail.com, you can do that as well. That gets you in, and always good to hear from listeners on the show. So I appreciate it very much. Y'all have a good week, and this is Ashlyn Dave reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running, and don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all take care.